Just how difficult is it for a band who typically plays extended tracks to shorten the length of their songs? Find out now as I chat with the guys from French desert punk trio Red Sun Atacama right here on Aftershocks TV. Okay, Aftershocks TV, Matt here. I'm back with you folks for another episode where we feature some of the best underground hard rock and metal artists on the globe. And today we're going to France, and I'm pleased to welcome to the show from desert punk rock upstarts Red Sun Atacama. We've got Clement, Robin, and Vincent joining us on Aftershocks. Thanks so much, guys, for coming on the show. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Matt. Thank you. We're doing fine.
Very well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Really glad to be here with you.
Great. Thank you, guys. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about this outstanding new record that you guys just put out. It's titled Darwin. It's your second full length. It's out on Mrs. Red Sound, and people can go check out the videos for the tracks Echoes and Revelator right now. And it's your guys' first release in 4 years since Lickin' Caber back in 2018. And the first thing I noticed with the sound, big changes and growth in the sound. The first thing that sticks out to me is the bass and the vocals really changed, I think, a lot on this record. We'll start with the bass. I know that's got much more treble in it now, I think, compared to the first record, where that had more of a low end, heavy bottom to it. Which a lot of, you know, that's what a lot of the stoner desert rock bands use, obviously. So you guys are doing something really different here on the new record. So let's talk about the changes to the band sound and the instruments on Darwin. I mean, what was it that you guys wanted to do differently on this record compared to your first record in terms of the instrumentation and musically?
I think the first things that we wanted is we wanted to sound as we sound on stage. Yes. We wanted to have the power trio mojo really on the record. So we want the people that heard Darwin to feel like they are in one of our show. We didn't want to add too much overdubs or three or four guitars. Okay. And this is something we wanted in the record. And about the treble, it's not a bass, it's kind of a rhythm guitar for us. we will be able to speak more about this song, but yeah, we didn't want something as muddy as we did in Darwin. We wanted something more straight to the point and more aggressive in the sound. Yep. So I think this is part of the treble you're speaking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had a lot more preparation for this album compared to the previous one. And the sound we have on this record is really the sound we wanted to have. On the other hand, on Lickin' Caber, the precedent record, it was more... the recording sessions were a lot faster and we had less time to think about it and really work on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to deepen a little bit on what we said, the thing is there is a big difference in the Darwin composition and production of the album and on the one of Lickin' Caber. Because on Lickin' Caber it was like 5 days, everything put together was 5 days and that's all. Okay. For Darwin, this time we took pre-production sessions with the tech engineer Amaury Sauvé, which worked on the album. It was like 3 days, then a break for 1 month to think about it, rework it, make it better. Then another 3 days for exactly the same thing. And then when everybody was kind of ready, 1 month later, we went on for one full week, but really well prepared, no doubt, very clear about what we wanted to sound, how we want to present everything, all the dynamics of the song,
the intention,
the intention, etc. So it was very different because it was more professional and more dedicated than previously for Lickin' Caber. We don't have that much money, we don't have that much time, so we really just went there. We calibrate the instrument, it sounded okay, and we go for it, you know. So yeah, it's very different, much more professional.
It was the first album, so it was okay for us to have something really raw and don't hear about. But for this one, for Darwin, we really want to to have the sound that we had in mind before.
Okay.
And just one last thing, because you talked a lot about being less on the low end side, less muddy, maybe. Mm-hmm. The thing is also that for this album, as the guy said, we wanted to have something. Well, we choose Amaury also because he's very different from all the other tech engineer, let's say, in the scene, or at least in France. In that sense,
in a stoner role. Yeah. He had a few references. He knew some band like Fu Manchu, and all, but it's not really his scene. It was more in post-genre, in post-punk, post-hardcore, this kind mm-hmm. of. And we really wanted to sound different from other bands. So yeah. We thought it was a good idea to propose something different in the sound and the intention of the album.
Yeah, maybe different in the sense that we wanted to work with somebody who was very good at his job, but didn't know anything about the sound of the genre. So that way he won't take influences to put them into our sound, but rather take our sound like it is and try to make it the best possible. So that's why I think there is a big difference between Likankabur and Darwin. Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Well, yeah, something you mentioned before about the you know, it's much more up tempo as well. It's got a much more punk, even sort of a garage vibe to it. It's less doomy, obviously. It has like a 90s almost alternative touch to it too. You know, which is really, I mean, I think in my opinion really has made you guys stronger as a band musically, and makes you definitely stand out from a lot of those bands within the, you know, the stoner genre. Was the decision to have more of a punk sort of centric sound and bass to the tracks, was that done purposefully to try and just, like I said, try to separate yourselves from the rest of your musical peers, or was it just something that just kind of came out naturally?
I think in the beginning, the stoner has a lot of punk influence. I don't know, but Chaos, they have a lot of tracks that are really speedy, but of course we really like now the Stooges and all the new scene, the garage scene, like the Idols and all this thing. But I think it's more an approach or a mood we want to have, to keep the urgency in the song, make it simple and to speed the tempo. For instance, we have some riff or song that could be qualified as doom song, but we just change the tempo to make it feel more punkish and approach. But we like to say that we mix punk and stoner, but it's not punk riffing. It's more like a mood, an approach, an urgency, I think, that we want to put in the song.
Yeah, the intention was never like to put it that way. The intention was always to do something that struck to us, speak to us, rather than the genre, the scene sounds like this, so what can we do to make it different? Actually, in Likankabur already, but we didn't have the quality of sound production that we wanted. Okay. But we already have the roots of this, and the thing is, what we have on Darwin today, it's the same kind of song sound that we and intention we have on live for years, but it's the first time we kind of realized this on an album. So
and I think we want to go further on the big differences between the intensities, and we wanted to have a really big gap between all the kind of landscape we wanted to have. I think that in the first album, it was more like a monolith and the same, like heavy riffing and really heavy stuff. And here, and I think on the heavy stuff,
one dense piece of stoner.
But I think the psychedelic part, we wanted to have it really, really psychedelic and really Pink Floydish. The heavy parts, there are less than in the first, but when the heavy parts come, we will really want it to be in your face.
Yeah, to drum.
and all the speedy parts, we really wanted to have it speed or punkish. So we really wanted to have different landscapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a sense, Darwin is just the same band, but just pushing further every little aspect of the band, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, let's talk about vocals too there, Clement. I know, you know, you guys definitely went away, changed obviously vocally as well, a little less of the harsher type of vocals. On Darwin, it's really more of the high-end vocals, which, I mean, I really like. I think, like I said, it really fits that up-tempo punk style perfectly. So what made you decide to go different vocal direction on this record compared to Licking Caber?
I speak for myself, of course, but the thing is, I still don't feel like a singer. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning of the band, we looked heavily for a singer, but the issue is for us, and still today, vocals has to be part of the whole structure. You know, we mm-hmm. really work as a... this is not a guitar band or a lead singer band or anything. And so it was very difficult for us to find a singer who was okay to be in the middle of everything, not in front. Mm-hmm. So struggling to do that.
And also not to sing all the time.
Yeah, and not to, you know, it's important for us to don't have this kind of all the time singing, you know, so just to be able to drop out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning, I started, but nobody wanted to sing. So I just try my luck and do the best I can. In the end, we stay like this. But I really wasn't comfortable with my singing, with my voice, because I didn't feel like a singer. So mm-hmm. there was a lot of heavy processing on it. Well, actually, it's the guy that told me that my voice was okay and we can go lower on this and mm-hmm. have it less
wanted us to more present because mm-hmm. you were more confident and really liked what we heard
the results are great, but at the beginning I was like no, let me hide behind all the effects. I don't want mm-hmm. people to really hear my voice, so mm-hmm. and it's not clean vocals neither on this album, but sure. It's a fine middle ground for me.
You don't need that much effects anymore.
Well, it seems to me that the vocals are more like you're used more as like another instrument instead of being a central part of the band sound. It's just another part of it, correct?
It will stay like this, always,
yeah.
I think.
Okay. It's an intention,
And we wanted to feel more natural because we didn't double the voice as we did for the first, and we really wanted to have a more natural voice because we are very, very happy with the voice as it is.
Very good. Now, do you guys feel that this is now, you know, you found your sound, you know, that you've been looking for on a sonic level? I mean, or are you the type of band that will probably change on each record and just kind of go with your gut feeling? Or do you really like what came out on Darwin? This is sort of the sound that you want to kind of use going forward.
I think it may be both ways. Yeah. Like it's the first time we had really the opportunity to record our sound, and we are glad of the record of the sound we have on it. But maybe we'll have some evolution for the next one, and it will be different. But today it reflects our true identity. In terms of sound.
As you say in the beginning of the interview, we spent 4 years with this album. But which is great is that it's not just because of COVID. It's just we could test our tracks during shows and see what works, what doesn't work, and there is a lot of evolution between the first time we play a song in the show and then when we recorded it with Amori. So we really like to test it, and I think. The songs that are releasing now with Darwin, they sound as we want for now. Mm. But for instance, if we play all songs from Licking Caber in the show, we wouldn't play it as we did before. So yeah. I think we constantly evolve. Of course, we always want our fans here not to be disappointed with new song. They have some habits with our first song, but I don't think that we will be a one-trick pony band that always want to
have the same thing,
to mm-hmm. play something, and we are always curious about new styles. But
but sound-wise, we're very happy right now. I don't see us moving too far from this for now. But you know, you know, a lot of bands that changed a lot in between albums. But I don't see us making a big difference a la Rated Air to the last album of Queen of Stone Age, you know, not that kind of shift. Well, you know?
I got you, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll keep strong 90s roots.
I never listened to anything in 90s, but that's funny. Because I play that, so that's cool, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely has a 90s feel vibe to it. It definitely does.
Maybe I need to listen to some things from the 90s.
There you go. Yeah. Great. Well, just one more question in terms of, you know, your music. Is one of the interesting things that I noticed about the song structures, obviously you guys incorporate a lot of slow jams, psychedelic jams, you know, into your songs. And then what's, I think, really, really great about your sound is you do that, but then you go right back into those fist pounding, you know, up-tempo parts. And, you know, you do that, I think, really well, because, you know, which I think you don't do is you don't overdo it. You don't go into, say, 4 to 5 minutes of a slow jam and then, you know, get back into it. Because a lot of times when people listen to, you know, this kind of music, if in the middle of a track, a song starts to really, you know, slow down and get into, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, people tend to start to lose interest at times. But I think what you guys do is you don't have really those long, slow parts. They're long just enough, and then you know how to then, you know, just go right back into the, you know, the heavier up-tempo parts. So when you're structuring the songs, I mean, how are you able to know how long to maybe ride on a part, especially if it's slow, without going too long or overdoing it?
It's very difficult.
It's very difficult.
And we have a lot of debate and a lot of time to decide the perfect duration.
I think you cut it. Shorter it, and when it's too short, you stop. Because that's the point where you're enough efficient, and you won't get people bored.
Exactly.
Because it's too long.
Yeah, the thing is, when you are really in the vibe, and that happens often when we're practicing and, well, creating, componing, we start jamming, and I think there is versions of the song that are 1 hour long just because you are into it and you are adding something and something, but it's kind of riffing on the same jam, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a big effort on us to just say, okay, this is too much. This is nice, but you keep it short. And
everything is too long at the beginning.
It's easier for us to do long songs than do short songs. And actually we shortened the album by maybe 10 minutes working with Amaury. Because he helped us see that, for instance, this instrumental part could be 2 minutes shorter and would be as great and better serve this song, you know.
Right. And we want long song, but we don't want people to get bored in the song, so we want to have a lot of different adventures in the same song. But
exactly.
Maybe there are some songs that just last for 3 minutes and you can get bored in it.
So
our challenge is really to be able to write a 10-minute song, but we don't want anybody to bury in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you guys see yourselves ever just writing, you know, just typical 3 to 6, 5, 4 or 5 minute songs, or is really the major part of your sound is including those, you know, parts?
Well, this is a challenge for the third album. Actually, we said
oh, really?
We said to each other every song should be within 5 minutes max, and maybe we keep one song for 10-12 minutes. But we want to work on that, because even if in the genre there is a lot of people that really can appreciate a 20-minute song, 12-minute song, the thing is to try to pull more people. I'm not saying to go mainstream or anything, but just to
be more catchy.
Yeah, more catchy, more easy to listen to some people. It would be nice to have like 3-4 minute songs, but it's hard on us because we, as you noticed, we like to.
There is always another jam.
There is always
hiding and waiting for you.
Exactly.
And also, it would be great to play more than 5 songs in a gig.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an issue. That's a
limit. I was going to ask about live. I mean, how hard is it? Difficult is it really to sort of replicate, you know, those songs, especially those psychedelic jammy parts in your live sound? Do you? How difficult is that to really replicate those 8-9 minute songs to your live set?
Yeah, honestly, not difficult at all.
Okay,
because as Vincent was saying just before, we went into the studio with Amaury and we asked him to do to sound as live as possible. There's something maybe you didn't notice, but if you listen really with good headphones or with a good hi-fi system, you close your eyes. Actually, the sound is not. There is not a lot of change in the song, in the sound, and you really have the drums in the middle, and you have really the bass really on the left, and the guitar really on the right, or the other way around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing. It's very, very little overdub, like really not at all. There is also big emphasis on having the less magic trick as possible behind. Amaury, what we really like with him, it takes a lot of time before recording, but when we press record, everything is calibrated, just so there is the mix of the album is kind of more or less a mix on the live. So once all is done, then, and even the effects are all on the board, which for the vocals or for the bass or for the guitar. So aside from very specific things that can be only done on studio, everything we do, it's just live. So we just go there and we do our thing. So
we try not to cheat.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we add a little keyboard and there are some overdub from, but it's really to have a little texture more, but 90% of the song, it has to be live.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Excellent. Well, let's talk about, one of the obviously more noticeable things about the band is the Chilean influences. Obviously, in the band's name, Atacama, referencing the Atacama Desert in Chile, or the fact that I know in the press release, it mentions how Darin was, the album was directly inspired by Andean Magic, referencing obviously the Andes Mountains. So a lot of references to Chile. Talk about just the band's Chilean influence. I mean, are you guys from Chilean descent, or is just some sort of passion you have for the country and what it entails?
Yeah, well, I'm binational. I'm French and Chilean. Chilean from my father and French from my mother. But at the very beginning of the band, when we were looking for a name, I'm not even sure I was the one suggesting it. We don't want to make it something like the French Chilean band, but I think just the thing is Atacama, the desert of Atacama, but it could be Gobi or any other exotic desert.
Okay.
Was kind of a nice option to kind of ring a bell to the people of the scene, but at the same time it's not the classic American desert, and also I think there is a lot of kind of mysticism and very, very peculiar things about Atacama Desert. And for Darwin is not in Atacama, it's in Patagonia, in south of Chile. But I feel like the whole country is kind of, there is a mystical touch to it. And I think that's what we like about it and why we go there and why there is a lot of references to Chile.
A lot of mysteries, there is an observatory, a lot of legends mm-hmm. about the old habits of the people of Atacama. Yeah, so yeah. I think for our imagination, it was already a good playground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And South American South America brings something really different yeah. than mm-hmm. Californian deserts also, which is great.
On traditional music, it's just kind of a kind of little snap on the album. We want to add two or three little touches that could remind South American music, mm-hmm. and I think it can add something interesting to
yeah.
to our
yeah. And it's also a desert that illustrates the extremes for
hot and cold, yeah.
for the audience, I think, because mm-hmm. it can be like really, really, really dry, and still there is some life, and mm-hmm. It's an echo to the different vibes, atmospheres we tried to build in our music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Very good. Excellent. Well, let's talk about just real quick about the seed in France right now. I mean, you guys are signed to Mrs. Red Sound, which is, I believe, the Mars Red Skies label.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, obviously, and they're one of the bigger, obviously, bands in the genre within France who play that traditional stoner doom psychedelic style. Witchfinder is another band that's doing great things, I know, right now. But there does seem to be a style resonating, you know, as well. That sounds sort of like what you guys are doing on Darwin. Another band I became aware of recently is Greyborn, which has sort of a very similar style as well. It's got some alternative, you know, 90s indie rock sort of influences. So tell us, I guess, just talk a little bit about the scene right now in France and what you're seeing in terms of this style that you're playing now coming out of the country. Is this something that you guys are really kind of doing, you know, on your own, or is this something that is resonating within a lot of the bands in the scene there?
Well, the French scene, what I like about it, we know that we are not the best country for, in terms of audience and number of bands. We are not Sweden, mm-hmm. we are not Germany, we are not Greece. But the thing is, I feel like today there is a kind of new wave, to say so, of first scene, you know. The okay. first one was a few years ago when there was Loading Data, Marcel Sky, of course, Glosson, some bands like this, mm-hmm. Which were like kind of the very first wave of the bands from France. Yeah, kind of pioneer for us for the genre. Okay. And the thing is, building up for a few years now, maybe 4-3 years, there is a lot of cool bands, and what we really like about it, we know a lot of them, you know, when you are touring there, it's a small community, so sure. you can't tend to know everybody. Okay. And what we really like is when you listen to Decazia, or when you listen to Stun from the Sky, or when you listen to Clegane, or everybody has his kind of own thing, and that's why we really
in
like
their music and in their artworks too. It's like yeah. I, mm-hmm. I think a lot of bands in France try to go to avoid all the cliche, like yeah. I don't know, naked woman in the desert, mm-hmm. lot of the artwork, I don't know, this kind of thing. Every band has a really, really singular approach, and I think it's something we try to develop. But there are other scenes that are really exciting. I don't know, all the Scandinavian in Norway, in Sweden, and in England also. Yeah, a lot yeah. of dark bands that we love. But it's true that in France, we have a lot of diversity, and everybody know each other. I think it's a small stage, so it's kind of really, really a great place to be right now for this. Even if it is not perfect, it's not always easy for the shows, for the yep. the audience isn't always here. It really depends on the cities, because there are a lot of differences between the cities. Mm-hmm. But the scene is really exciting here.
Very cool. Excellent. So what do you guys now have planned in terms of playing live? Are you going to do any tours, or are you just focusing on playing locally and maybe getting onto some festivals? What's the plan?
Yeah, we have like three
well, no,
three
festivals. We have six okay. six dates for this summer.
Yeah,
and we are working on the next. We can't announce it right now. Okay. In France, right now, it's the biggest metal festival, the Hellfest. We're not going.
We avoid to plan a tour.
Within the next 2 weeks, but for this summer, we have some exciting show in France.
Yep.
We will playing with Mondo Generator this weekend in the mountain in France, and I think it will be great. Totally, but we are working forward for the next things in this fall.
Yeah, we're trying to build up a tour, a French tour for now, for next November. Okay. We have the 6 dates with 3 festivals this summer. And we are already starting to book for next spring because we know we have some contacts as some very interesting people that want us to tour. So next spring should be our most traveled tour ever. We're going to do a lot of countries in Europe, which will be great. But yeah, we'll see from now. Always the situation, you know. But we are looking for some exciting news within this winter. Yeah.
Very good. Excellent. All right. Well, Red Sun Anacama is the band. Check out their still new release called Darwin. It's out now on Mrs. Red Sound. And guys, where can the viewers and the listeners go to check out the band's music, merchandise, and just to keep up with the band in general?
Yeah, I think the best is to listen to the music, Bandcamp, to follow us, simply Facebook or Instagram, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. All right. Once again, Red Sun Anacama, the new album is titled Darwin. And guys, thanks for coming on Aftershocks. Good luck with the record. And, see you on the road soon, hopefully. Hopefully you'll be here down the road.
Pass the phone and come to see us.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, guys. So yeah, this will be up next week, next Thursday. Okay. Yep. We'll have this up. I'll send you all the links and everything, the banner. And once again, I really appreciate it, guys. The record is really it's excellent, man. I really love the sounds. I love it. It's different, it's unique, and keep up the good job. It's great stuff.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right.
Bye. Bye.